Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
Friday. Yep, coming just in the nick of time. Thanks for hooking up and hanging with me here, Newsline PM. I appreciate that. So the Seattle Parks Department has never had a float in the Gay Pride Parade before. And so this year decided, you know, we should have a float in the Gay Pride Parade. And so with everything that had taken place and transpired in the legislature, you had, you know, the legislature passed the marriage equality law, the governor signed it, and they thought, it's a natural. Let's do a float centered around the theme of marriage equality. Sue Goodwin is the director of the Seattle Parks and Recreation Folk and joins me here on Newsline PM. Well, that plan kind of went awry, didn't it, Sue?
Well, thank you for having us. And actually, my title is the Recreation Director for Seattle Parks and Recreation.
Okay. The Recreation Director for the Seattle Parks and Recreation Department.
Yes, sir. And
oh,
thank you for that.
You got it.
We didn't really pull anything. It is our first year, as you had said, to be in the Gay Pride Parade. Libraries and fire and many city departments have for a long time been in that. And actually what happened was one of our staff came to us and said, how come we don't have a Pride Parade? How come we aren't part of the parade? And we all said, well, yeah, why aren't we? And it just so happened, of course, because of the fate of the same-sex marriage kind of still being questioned and being in the polls in a couple months, we made sure that when we talked to our staff about participating in the event, that there was no reference to any kind of support of marriage, because, of course, it is not legal in the state of Washington at this time, and that we could, of course, fully participate in the Gay Pride Parade, just as wonderful people that we are in supporting Gay Pride and with our other city departments as in part in the parade for this year.
Hey, I think it's a great idea. Number two, I think it fell in the wrong place at the wrong time, because with the referendum 74 having gathered the needed number of signatures to put this measure on the ballot, as it is now a ballot measure, you're just the Ethics and Elections Commission says, we can't take a side here on something that is an election issue. So that's kind of left you kind of scrambling to find a new theme for the float, right?
Well, actually not really finding a theme for the float, because we always wanted to participate as just supporting Gay Pride in the city of Seattle. Seattle Parks and Recreation welcomes all folks, all people, and we love to participate in any kind of parade. We are, as you had mentioned earlier, Parks and Recreation. That's what we do. We have fun out there. So we're just supporting our belief in equality for all, and that gay rights, as well as everyone's rights, is important, and we should march with that in mind, but that we will in no way, if anybody has any personal beliefs about marriage, can display that, because we are city employees first and foremost.
Right.
And that day we are supporting the city in their support of Gay Pride.
So what is the theme of the float now that you're putting together?
Well, the theme of the float is about unity and inclusion. We're going to have what we're thinking of is having a bunch of sand on the float with chairs and umbrellas, supporting people coming together and just supporting one another in an open and welcoming way, and just having a party out there that we, too, support gay rights throughout the city of Seattle in our work, and with no reference, of course, to any sort of gay marriage or anybody's preference that way.
Now, you have to have a no-smoking sign out there, though.
We have to have a non-smoking sign out there, right?
No smoking allowed.
Yeah, no smoking, and please pick up your trash. Bring it in and bring it out.
You got
all good messages.
There's how many marriages are performed in city parks over the course of a year? A lot, right?
Well, we rent our facilities all over Seattle. We have over 400 parks. What an amazing amount of venues we have for beautiful weddings. People come and rent our facilities all the time. We don't ask them what that's about. Anybody's allowed to come in and rent any of our facilities. They tell us how many people they have that are gathering and such, and we have our special events that do all those rentals through our parks department.
See,
I'm imagining there must be I'm imagining there must be hundreds of weddings that happen at our park.
And I'm going to be betting here, because I'm betting that the marriage equality law is going to withstand the challenge from Referendum 74. You guys are going to find yourself with a whole slew of new customers.
And what I'm thinking exactly is that we, too, will take advantage of that new marketing opportunity and help promote that as well. But like I said before, we support the rights of all people. And Seattle Parks has always been open and welcoming to all and different diversities and different thinkings and different thoughts. And this is just one more way we can help support the inclusion of everybody in what we do.
Well, what was it that kept, and I don't mean this in a critical sense, what was it that kept the Parks Department from participating in the parade in previous years?
I don't know. Personally, I go out there every year and rah-rah and do all that. But finally someone noticed, like, you know, hey, why aren't we participating? I just think it was an afterthought. People support everybody, and it's just what we do every day. And it wasn't even thought of, wait a minute, we need to be out there as well, until one of our staff just came to our attention and said, hey, come on, we need to do this. And all of a sudden, all the light bulbs went off. It's like, oh, yeah, of course we do.
So how big is the float going to be? How much work is going to go into this?
And well, let me tell you, I think we're going to be using just one of our flatbed trucks, I believe, and they're actually planning it right now, because like I said, we didn't even start thinking about this until maybe 10 days ago, so it happened pretty quickly. And of course, all the decorations and such will be done on staff's own time. Anybody who wants to participate in decorating the float will be done off of city hours. It'll be done in an area where we actually keep some of our trucks in a Westbridge Center. And they will be decorating during the week, after hours, and probably all day next Saturday, getting ready for the event on Sunday.
Well, this better be a good-looking float now, Sue.
Hey, it better be a good-looking float, because our reputation is riding on this float.
I mean, you know, a couple of wheelbarrows full of sand and a couple of fake rhododendron bushes are not going to cut it.
No, I tell you, it's going to be the enthusiasm and the of the folks on the float and dancing and celebrating all that Parks brings to the city of Seattle, and just showing that our diversity is all over the place and we walk the talk, and we just can't wait to be shaking it out there with everybody.
So who gets to who has to decide who gets to ride on the float? I would imagine that there's probably going to be more people wanting to ride on it than you have room for.
Well, I tell you, you know, Seattle Parks and Recreation, we're a pretty healthy bunch, and I'm hoping a lot of our staff want to run alongside the truck just as well. So we should have an equal opportunity for everybody, people who need to maybe sit for the day and people who would love to run up and down.
Well, I'm going to look for you in a lawn chair.
I'll be one of the ones running up and down, I hope.
I think you ought to be in a lawn chair, kind of, you know, like flipping an imaginary burger or something.
You know, that sounds good, but it needs to be a healthy burger.
Oh, no, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. Everything's good in moderation.
There you go.
That's what we believe, too.
All right, Sue. Sue Goodwin is the recreational director for the Seattle Parks and Recreation Department. Thanks for taking some time today to talk with me. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. I had a good time, too.
All right, take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. So, you know, I'll tell you something. Well, never mind. I'm just thinking that, you know, when we look back on the challenge to this marriage equality law, because I really do think that we're going to be the first ones in the nation that vote to keep marriage equality on the books, we're going to look back on some of this foolishness that went on and kind of grin at it.
Time to discuss, dissect, and debate the news. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
So the president stepped in, President Barack Obama, and effective immediately. Young immigrants who arrived in this country before they turned 16 and are not older than 30 will be allowed to apply for work permits as long as they have no criminal history, even if they were brought here illegally. I talked with Jorge Barone earlier with the Northwest Immigration Rights Project about what this really means.
This announcement is only going to grant people a temporary form of, you know, it's not even really immigration status. It's just basically granting them temporary protection so that they won't be deported and so they'll be able to get a work permit. But in order for them to actually be on a path to citizenship and have permanent status here, that's going to require congressional action. So that would require the passage of the DREAM Act, which is something that we've been calling for a number of years, and hopefully that will still be a change that will happen besides this announcement.
Okay, so this then is the limit of the president's ability to even accommodate this much. He statutorily can't go any further then, correct?
Well, he can't go further in terms of granting people additional status and permanent status for them to be able to actually live here as permanent residents and eventually apply for citizenship. He can grant this kind of form of temporary status to a broader group of people, but he's chosen to, focus on this particular group, which, of course, everybody thinks is a lot of people think are the most compelling cases.
Well, and this is for kids who have been here, who've gone to school here. Maybe they've served in the U.S. military. Those are the people that are specifically targeted and will be prevented from being deported.
That's right. And I think one of the good things about this is that, the administration, of course, has already made announcements about, persecutorial discretion, and they were looking at individual cases. But this is actually going to apply to a much broader group. And it's clear that, people who meet these very specific criteria are going to be eligible to apply for this temporary status, at least, even before they get into the deportation process, which is something that we had called for, because, part of the weird dynamic on this is that was happening before this announcement was that, people who are not in deportation proceedings were saying, well, I can't access, work authorization. I can't, know what my status is. And so this will give at least those people some temporary status so that they can continue contributing as they have been, but be more fully engaged in our community. So I think it's a welcome development. It's not a solution by any means to our immigration, the problems with our immigration system, but I think it's definitely a step in the right direction.
So let me ask you, though, is there what I would call a backdoor uh-oh to this? And the uh-oh is that it is incumbent on these people to prove that they were brought here before they turned 16. It's incumbent on them to show that they've been in the country for at least 5 continuous years. So how do they go about that? Because if their parents brought them here, do they need their parents or their uncle or whatever, some relative, to validate the criteria that will allow them to stay? Does then that put the parents in jeopardy of deportation?
Well, I think those are some of the questions that we're still trying to sort out. I mean, the announcement today was kind of the framework, and the administration has not actually released the details on how the process is actually going to work. And believe me, Ken, we do the immigration legal services for low-income people, and so I can tell you we've gotten hundreds of calls just this morning asking us very much the same similar kinds of questions. So we're going to learn over the coming weeks, is what the administration said, exactly what the path is going to be, the process to actually get this implemented. But obviously, those are going to be some of the points that we're going to raise with the administration, that it's very important that people have a way to apply that is not going to put them or their families in an additional risk, because that's obviously going to deter people from coming forward. So I think it will be, a process where people are obviously going to have to show some documentation about the fact that they've been here. We're hoping that it accounts for the realities that when you're in undocumented status, you obviously are not going to have a lot of documentation necessarily. So those are the things that we're going to have to work on the next several weeks.
And I think it's the right thing to do, but I've got to look at just because I tend to have a streak of cynicism that runs through me, thinking, okay, thank you, President Obama, as we are 145 days away from the presidential election, how much of this is politically motivated and how much of this is altruistic, and does it really make a difference?
Well, I do think it makes a difference. I mean, I can tell you that we've already talked to young people this morning who are thrilled, because for them, those individuals, there's still a process that they're going to have to go through. There's going to be, thousands, certainly here in Washington, but, hundreds of thousands around the country who are going to benefit from this, who are likely to benefit from this. And so I think that this is important for those individuals. It's not a solution. It is a temporary fix to a particular problem with our immigration system. It's better late than never in terms of having a temporary fix. And again, we need to continue to redouble our efforts to make sure that the greater issue of immigration reform gets tackled by Congress.
And I'm going to tell you, if you want to get a good sense of the type of people that are going to be impacted by this decision today, go to LATimes.com, LATimes.com, and look for a story called An Immigrant in Limbo Between Two Americas. LATimes.com, An Immigrant in Limbo Between Two Americas. In fact, I'll put the link to that up on my Facebook. In a moment, we're going to get a hold of Herb Weisbaum. Talk about credit card scams.
This is Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
You know, this immunity that has been put into play for young immigrants, illegal immigrants, by President Obama. You know, the conditions here are that you have to be enrolled in school, hold a high school diploma or a GED, or served in the military. You have to be here in the U.S. 5 continuous years. You have to have been brought here before you were 16. You can't be older than 30. One of the things that bugs me, and I don't understand why this can't be corrected immediately, veterans who are not citizens, who are honorably discharged, are still not eligible for citizenship. And I think that is so wrong. I think that if you serve the United States in the military, that if you would like to apply for citizenship, you should have that available to you immediately following that honorable discharge. And I don't understand why that isn't in play. The other thing that I did is I put the link up on my Facebook page. I was talking about this LA Times article. I put that link up on my Facebook page. Go to Facebook.com/Ken Schramm. Hit the like and get on there, and you'll be able to see. It's a very poignant story about, and I think this young woman is a good example of who this immunity law is now going to benefit. In a moment, Herb Weisbaum joins me to talk about credit card scams and how things are getting a little better, but a little worse at the same time.
Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
Oh, thanks for hooking up and hanging with me here on this Newsline PM edition Friday afternoon, the 15th of June, 2012. I appreciate that a lot. So I got it. And Herb Weisbaum, the consumer man, joins me here today.
Hello, Ken.
Hello, Herb. So I got to tell you, earlier this week, or maybe it was late last week, I get this from Bank of America. I get two new Visa cards. Says, It appears as if there's the possibility that your previous Visa card may have been,
breached, compromised.
Breached something
sure.
or other. So
sure.
Please, get these in play and destroy the other ones right away. Scared the bejesus out of me.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what we're talking about when we're talking about credit card scam? How big is this issue, and how are the banks handling it?
Okay, well, what you had was the what happens after there's a credit card fraud. So
okay.
They believe that your information was compromised somehow, one of these data breaches or whatever, and therefore they're saying they're going to shut the old card down. They're giving you a new card to make sure that you're not a victim of fraud.
Okay.
We're talking about record numbers. A brand new study out by Javelin Strategy and Research indicates that credit card fraud is bigger than it has ever been before as far as the numbers go. So the numbers of people being attacked are bigger than ever before. It's the third year in a row that fraud prevention has declined. The losses aren't as great because they're catching it more quickly. So the bad news is more of us are being affected. The good news is the banks are catching it, or we're catching it more quickly. So the overall loss is $6 billion, which is a lot of money, quite frankly, last year, isn't going up a lot. But your likelihood of having a harassing situation because, you've got to shut the card down and do whatever, that has actually gone up.
So what leaves me susceptible to that? Is it my own sloppiness? Is it that I'm not, if I insert my card into some machine somewhere, should I be paying attention as to whether or not someone's got a copier in there that they can extract the numbers that I punch in, or what?
It's about three different things. First of all, it is people being sloppy, everything from not locking your cell phone, which a lot of people do with smartphones, do shopping stuff with it now, or leaving your credit card number somewhere where someone can find it, or being the victim of or being suckered in by a phishing scam and giving out your credit card number to a bad guy who sends you an email that says your account's about to be closed. So sometimes we're doing it. Sometimes we're not being as vigilant as we should be, checking our accounts on a regular basis, looking for credit card fraud. Some cases it's the banks not doing a good job of catching the fraud. And then the third one is the bad guys are getting more clever. I mean, this one we were talking about in the news yesterday and today about the Good to Go pass. That's one of the first times I've ever seen something that good. There was a, because it was a government thing. They pretend to be the government. And if you have one of those Good to Go passes, and with all the trouble they've had recently, you go, oh, maybe something screwed up. Yeah, I better give them my account number. So they're getting much, much better at social manipulating, getting us to give them the information they want to use against us. So you look at all three of those things, and that's why it's gone up.
See, because here's the deal, and I'll keep coming back to me, to use me as an example, because I'm really paranoid about this crap.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
So I don't have this stuff stored on my cell phone. I don't use my cell phone to pay bills.
Mm-hmm.
I never, ever, ever, ever give my credit card number to someone on the phone who calls me.
Mm-hmm, right.
If I call the bank, I'll give them the credit
sure,
card number.
Absolutely.
But someone who's calling me, I don't care what it is, I never give out my credit card number.
Right.
I shred stuff like, you know, like I'm the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing escapes my home or
right.
my, in terms of receipts and stuff. And I'm very careful about where I use my card in terms of, like, you know, ATM machines
right.
and things of that nature.
Well, you could still be vulnerable because someone could steal your mail before it even gets into your
nope,
mailbox.
Nope. No,
well,
they okay.
Till,
yeah.
There's mail thieves that work, you know, they're inside jobs, so they could steal that. You could be the victim of skimmer. What if you give your card to a waiter or waitress? I mean, even I don't follow it all the way. And I'm not accusing waiter or waitress,
okay.
but people do use little skimming devices. That has happened. There could be a data breach that involves your card number that you know or do not know about, because sometimes they don't have to tell you about them, so it could come that way. Or you could have infections on your computer if you pay bills online, and it's a keystroke logger, so when you're paying your credit card bill, the bad guy's getting your credit card number by using your computer, because a lot of people don't use protective software on their computers. So we're doing a lot of it.
So what are the best things that people can do? What are the simplest, easiest a proactive way to try to keep your credit card or credit card numbers out of the hands of these scammers?
Be careful who you give the number to as best as you can. Get a locking mailbox so that your mail comes in, and if it's a bill or whatever, they can't get the number. Shred the documents as you do. Check your accounts online every day or at least once a week to look for something that should not be there. And I got to give the bank some credit. They're doing much better jobs. If you're out of profile, the bank will proactively contact you or shut the account down. I had a situation where I was making a lot of charity payments at the end of the year, December 31st. I want to get it in for taxes. And after five, the computer shut me down because I thought it was fraud. Somebody running up that many charges back to back. And I had to call Capital One Security and say, hi, I'm trying to get these tax things in. Open up my account again. I had to prove who I was. And the other thing is security. You know, all these security questions, it asks you your high school and your mother's maiden name and everybody puts that on their Facebook page. Well, the bad guys get this information and they can use it. So there's two things. A, you shouldn't be putting that stuff out. Or B, some banks are starting, and this is the big suggestion in this report, use questions that you, the consumer, could make up. So I could put, what was the name of my first girlfriend? Or what was your favorite teacher in high school? Or something that you might not be so obvious and put out on a social media site, so that I could make up my own questions and have answers, which would be much better than these things. You know, what was your last home address? Well, that's out there somewhere. Somebody can snag it.
So this is the kind of information that you're going to be pumping out on a 15-hour-a-week basis now.
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
Everything
starting
to feed
Monday.
Your brain. Yep. Monday, 3 to 6 on
See,
KVI,
now,
our sister station.
And here's the dilemma, because I'm going to want to tune into you, but I like listening to the news in the afternoon as well.
Well, you can split it up.
Because I'm a junkie.
Or we're going to put podcasts on my Facebook
that ain't
page. Concerning.
I'm not doing podcasts.
All right. Well, then just split it up.
But starting Monday,
uh-huh.
KVI,
yep.
3 o'clock. And is it everything and anything?
Yep,
or,
and scams and ripoffs and some fun things. I talked to Lewis Black when he was in town, his take on some, I'm sorry, but I asked him if he bought Facebook stock. He had
I
some
did.
Fun comment. Yeah, well, he's
a
little smart. We're going to just good deals, bad deals, things you need to know, talk about privacy and security and making your kids smarter and all kinds of things that affect your pocketbook and your wallet and your mind and your health and your safety and saves you time.
And a lot of this, I would imagine, is going to focus, it's going to somehow be married to technology as well.
We'll cover a lot of technology, and we'll also cover breaking consumer news of the day. If something's happening, if Congress does something that's going to affect your wallet, not a tax or whatever, but a consumer issue, you know, if they decide they're going to ban 16-ounce sugary pops in this area. You know we're going to be right on that and talk about it, whether that makes any sense or not.
Well, you know, and since you bring that up, I got a note. Not only is Michael Bloomberg in New York looking at banning soda pop containers 16 ounces or more, they're also looking at banning the big tubs of popcorn that you buy in the movies. They don't want you getting those.
Right.
And they're also looking at banning milkshakes.
No.
Yes.
That's un-American.
Now, that should be one of your topics next week.
Well, I actually talked to the Surgeon General about that for next week. She was in town. And it's interesting because her take is consumer information, not Big Brother. And I asked her about what Mayor Bloomberg's doing. We're going to play that on Monday.
That's going to be interesting. So this is going to be Monday through Friday. Mm-hmm. It's 3 to 6, 570 KVI.
Yep.
Is it going to be called Herb Weisbaum, the consumer guy?
The consumer man, Herb Weisbaum.
I like consumer guy.
That's okay.
I
actually tried to get a URL for that way back when it was taken.
So
I took the consumer man.
So you switched over to consumer.
And I could use a cape. So that was a nice thing. You know, if you're a consumer man, you can have a cape and everything.
You're going to wear a cape?
No. Have you ever seen my logo?
Yeah, but I want to see. No, I've seen the logo. I want to see you.
You want to see me in a cape?
I want to see you. In a cape.
Halloween, I will wear one for you.
We can get one from Phoenix Jones.
Okay, good.
he has a spare one.
By the way, we did that story yesterday, Phoenix Jones.
And
at the end, I said, he's not really a superhero, you know.
Oh, well, in some people's eyes. Yeah,
absolutely.
All right.
Thank you, Ken.
Be sure to tune in Monday starting on KVI, 3 o'clock, 570 KVI, Consumer Man, Herb Weisbaum. I'll be there.
Thank you. And I'll talk to you on the radio in a little while.
All right. Thanks. Oh, man, I am so glad we're hitting the final stretch of this week. Hang with us back in a moment.
Seattle's waking up to the Como Morning News 5 to 9. Right now, Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
Father's Day weekend. Happy Father's Day to me. Happy Father's Day there, Jeremy. Yeah, thumbs up from Jeremy. If you're looking for something unique, something a little different, something more... I don't know, adventurous? You might want to head to Marymore Park in Redmond. There you're going to find the Washington Brewers Festival. They've got a whole Father's Day weekend planned. Eric Radovich with the Beer Commission. How you doing?
Hey, I'm good, Ken. Happy Father's Day to me, too, this weekend.
Happy Father's Day to you, too. So what's going on at the Brew Fest?
I've got 64 breweries and 239 beers, live music and food and everything that you need to have a great, entertaining weekend here at Marymore Park.
So is this, it's an event that kids can go to as well, right?
Yeah, it's family-friendly on Saturday and Sunday. We're 21 and over tonight from 4 to 9 p.m. And then Saturday and Sunday, it's a unique event with great beer tasting that kids, you can bring the kids. We have a kids' play area with bouncy toys and crafts, and you can even make Dad a Father's Day card.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the kids can participate in the beer testing.
You know, we have a root beer garden, Ken. We do. We have a root beer garden, and it's brewed by some of our brewers, but no alcohol in that, of course.
I'll tell you what drew my attention. You're going to have some gourmet food trucks there, are you not?
Yeah, we've got some folks. Skillet is here. A lot of folks will know that name, and we've got a couple of other trucks on hand that people will recognize that are doing specialty foods to pair with different beers.
See, now this is going to start driving me crazy, Eric. I got to tell you, it's gotten to the point. It's like I remember, you drink red wine with red meat, and you drink white wine with, you know, I gave up that crap a long time ago. I don't necessarily want to pair wine with my dinner or beer. I want to drink something that I like and that tastes good.
Here's the good news about beer: is that the food that they're pairing with the food items will go with 70 different styles of beer, so you won't have to be. You won't have to be as pinpointed as some of the wine folks.
Don't get beer snobby on us now. I don't want any snobby beer. What do you mean you're drinking that malt liquor with pork? Don't you know that should be a pale ale?
There won't be anybody to that extent, I can guarantee you.
Now, hasn't the brewery folk here in Washington walked away with some awards lately too?
Yeah, they won 27 medals at the latest awards ceremony, and at the big event in Denver back in October, they won a couple of significant awards, and all that's listed on our website. I wish I had it on the top of my head, but yeah, there's a lot of award-winning beers here, and again, we have 152 breweries in this state now, second only really to California, which is, of course, a much bigger state. But breweries per capita, we're right there with 152 breweries now.
Can you, are there really, are, for example, I'll use you. Can you really tell the difference between a whole bunch of different beers? I mean, because I would imagine that some of the beers, the flavor and the taste and the I don't know, tongue texture is probably very subtle to the average person.
Yeah, I think there's a few folks that can do that. I am not among them. There are very few beers I don't like. I like just about everything that these guys make, and it ranges from IPAs to Kolsch to ginger, honey, wheat, rye beers, stouts, wit beers, and they all have different flavors, but I honestly couldn't tell you one from the other just from a blind taste test.
I mean, when I was growing up, I know my grandmother used to drink Ballantine Ale. Have you ever heard of Ballantine?
Yeah, I know Ballantine.
Is that a cheap beer?
That is a less expensive beer, yeah.
it's a cheap beer. Okay. So I want to hear something about you. You have this keg toss over the weekend, too, right?
Yeah, it's kind of a highlight during the event. We have our brewers that, of course, are working with kegs all day long, but most of those end up full, of course. But we have an empty keg toss. They toss kegs into little kiddie swimming pools for points, and we crown a keg-tossing champion every year. And I imagine at most of these breweries, you toss a few kegs around over the course of your job.
Could we have John Carlson sitting in the middle of the pool where the kegs are tossed?
Oh, that would be beautiful. Bring John out. I think he'd love that.
Never mind whether he'd love it. I'd be tossing kegs at him myself.
Ah, there you go. That's beautiful.
So where is this at Mary Moore Park? Because Mary Moore Park is pretty big.
It is a big park, and we're not far. If you've been to a concert here, we're very close to that music stage. We're on the west end of the park, just off Sammamish Parkway.
Okay, and how many taps are you going to have going?
239 different beers to taste. We do a little 5-ounce tasting. You get 6 tokens when you come in and try a few. You can buy additional tokens if you like, but way too many beers to choose from.
Can you buy, if you find a favorite, is there the means to buy some and take some home?
Not from this venue. So you'll have to note your favorite breweries. We have a great program. You can circle your favorites or checkmark your favorites. And then track them down following the festival.
Okay.
No beer to go.
And I know you also have a music stage. Just tell me there's no accordion bands or nothing like that going on.
No accordions. It's we're not Oktoberfest, so it's live music and some very talented folks, all local performers.
And no Lederhosen.
And no Lederhosen.
All right. Eric Radovich with the Washington Beer Commission, if you want to check this out at Mary Moore Park. There's a thing tonight, too, as well, from 4 to 9 p.m., but Saturday from 11 till 9, Sunday from 11 till 6. Good talking to you, Eric.
Okay, always a pleasure. Thanks so much. Visit WashingtonBeer.com for more info.
And happy Father's Day.
Hey, right back to you, Ken.